Morning!
Morning!
Welcome to the India Explained podcast, recorded in London and San Francisco. One take, unscripted, no rehearsal.
Hey Bunty, greetings from San Francisco. Rainy and cold here. How are things at your end?
Oh well, everything's okay in London. I mean, we are now preparing for Christmas, which is the big thing. No, everything's okay. I'm really looking forward to the break. Work has wound down. So really cool. And obviously, in the middle, we've had a bit of an incident with Twitter where our accounts were stopped and now they've been reactivated, I guess. Is that where it's at, Rohit?
Yes. So just, you know, there's a lot going on in India right now. This is not the biggest story in the world, of course. We know that. But, you know, in a small way, it's kind of connected to what's going on in India at large. What happened is that, you know, we are, I guess, known as, you know, critics of the government, though our goal really is to stand up and speak in whatever way, in whatever small way possible, and we don't have any delusions of grandeur. We just try to speak up for the underdog and just try to speak up against, you know, what we see as injustices. And Twitter suspended the account initially, temporarily, and then it gave us a warning and then about a tweet, which it said was anti-Modi. And I'm pretty sure that someone, you know, from the BJP set up an apparatus complaint. Now, the merits of that tweet, whether it was tasteless, whether it did violate the rules, etc., we can debate that endlessly. But the point we made was very simple, which is that Modi supporters, so-called bhakts, and people, vile people who are followed by Modi, they say much worse, much, much, much worse, right? Our tweet was a rhetorical comment, which was actually a critique of the kind of culture of vigilantism that Modi supporters were celebrating. Whereas Modi supporters have made death threats, and, you know, I have received some of these over the years. They routinely make rape threats against women. Just the vilest things they say to, you know, minorities, Dalits, with its caste minorities, anyone who is in a subaltern position, really. And Twitter does nothing, right? And I think Twitter's behavior in this matter has been absolutely disgraceful and shameful. Not only did they permanently suspend the India Explained account, they also suspended our associated accounts, which you and I both use very minimally and are largely not really political, right? We hardly use those accounts. So it was an attempt to shut us down completely. Well, be that as it may, we made a little bit of noise. We got some coverage, and I'm grateful to some journalists in the print and so on for actually covering this story. And magically, the permanent suspension became a temporary suspension for a week, contingent upon deleting the tweet. So we made our point. We screenshotted the tweet earlier. Now we have deleted it because, you know, we just want to go ahead and continue to kind of take a stand. So that's the story. Now this happens as a very small kind of thing happening in the wake of a larger culture of dissent and crackdown. And what's happening in India now is that as the Modi government, or the Modi Shah government, we should call it, has started to implement the or is threatening to implement the National Register of Citizens combined with the Citizenship Amendment Act, there have been widespread protests because the worry is, rightly so I feel, that the combination of both of these initiatives will be a systematic state-sponsored targeting of India's citizens who happen to be Muslim. So, and India's, you know, burning as we speak. There have been large-scale protests. The mainstream media, which is, you know, in the BJP government's pocket, has not covered these. Places like Uttar Pradesh are under an internet lockdown, and there the brutality has been absolutely extreme. They're cracking down on Muslims, not even on protesters, literally just barging into Muslim homes, Muslim passerbys. That's a BJP-run government. So I think by and large what's going on is that the protests have been peaceful. The police against the CAA, whereas the pro-CAA protests, you have people shouting Goli Maro Saloko and things like that. The police in Delhi, which again, the police in Delhi come under not the AAP government, but they come under, because Delhi is union territory, they come under the central government. So they're acting on the command of the Home Minister. They've been brutal there with students at Aligarh Muslim University, Jamia Millia Islamia. These are places where the protests started. So that's kind of combining, you know, a very quick kind of run through about a general culture of cracking down on any kind of criticism, which we got a small taste of, and then the much more significant wider issue today of the CAA and NRC.
Okay, so our Twitter, the India Explained handle, is up and running again. And as you pointed out, we thank the people who reached out to us in private. I think let's dwell on that a little bit, because I think, as you rightly identified, we are probably a little bit of a straw in this kind of ocean of opinions that are against the current government. And there are lots of opinions that are for the current government, right? Who are equally expressive, using language that is sometimes colorful and out of sorts with Twitter policy. So I think it's really odd that we got it wrong, there was an attempt to kind of get us to shut up. And I think it's good that we've come back. And I think the main point that I want to make, Rohit, is that I do not take the view that we are an anti-Modi mouthpiece. That is not a view that I take. You know, what has happened in the last 2 years that we've been doing this podcast, all of the things that we've talked about, just based on common sense, seems to be against the prevailing government. We've also criticized governments that are local governments. I remember we've done pieces on Delhi, we've done pieces on West Bengal, criticized the existing political establishment only because the mainstream government wasn't, the mainstream media wasn't covering it. So I don't shop into this label of being anti-Modi that easily. I think my intention in these, at least in these conversations that we have, is to have a balanced call-out on what's going on to the extent possible. Now, the irony is we haven't been able to find a modicum of balance because quite a lot of the things that have happened are on a scale of 1 to 100 or 200, right, in terms of craziness. So that's what's getting – that's the way the current day labeling is operating. That's my two pence worth on what positioning is. And why this drew attention from other people. If there are governments in opposition, we've consistently slammed the historic malfunctioning of the Congress government and its the play at dividing the nation along vote bank lines. We've never held back. We've never held back our punches on that. So, and that is something important to note as we kind of cross this watershed. Because increasingly people who tune in will be looking for us to be kind of knee-jerking into anti-BJP chapter every time we talk about something. And that necessarily may not be the case because we talk about a range of things. And the irony is that sometimes most of the things that we've picked up on legislative matters and law seems like, because the world's going crazy, it seems like a really odd place to be. That's the first point. The second, which is this citizens' bill, Rohit. There are two components to it. Can you unbundle the two things that are going on? One is a register of citizens.
Right.
And one is the amendment of a bill, right?
Correct.
Now, let's unbundle this. What is your understanding of the register?
Okay. And what is this thing called the NRC, it's a National Registry of Citizens, and it, as I understand, excuse me, so this had its origins in the Assam problem, which again goes back, 100 years, because there's this long-standing issue in Assam about Assamese identity, who's Assamese, who's not, which is not a religion-based issue strictly. The indigenous Assamese, which again is a kind of troubling construct, right? So the indigenous Assamese have been opposed to both Bengalis, whether Hindus or Muslims, coming from Bengal, and supposedly diluting Assamese identity. And they have also been opposed to what they say is illegal migration from Bangladesh. And I have no doubt that, some of it does happen. I mean, there are Bangladeshi refugees who've been living in India for decades now. That's the nature of, subcontinental existence, that these are very complex overlapping identities and these artificial borders drawn in 1947, which are now realities. And they, coincide with the borders. They represent the borders of the modern nation states in the region. And those are, realities and facts. But they are sort of fairly recent inventions over, very kind of complex social, cultural sort of webs, patterns of movements, communities. So the Assamese, their point has basically been that our identities being diluted by Bengalis, Hindus and Muslims, and by Bangladeshis, again Hindus and Muslims, right? So at some point of time, this idea of a kind of citizenry, a citizens register, was mooted. Now, as the Assamese swung BJP words, this was implemented in Assam, and over the last, it was targeted at Muslims, given who the BJP is and given what the BJP and RSS stood for, but its implementation was a complete and absolute disaster because a lot of Hindus, whatever their origin, whether they were Bengali Hindus from West Bengal or they were Bangladeshi Hindus, a lot of them got trapped in that snare as well. Plus, a lot of Assamese, people who were Assamese, who were Indian citizens, because they didn't have papers, got bracketed as illegal. So the mess in Assam happened on two levels. First, a lot of people who should not have been caught up in the dragnet got caught up, right? And there were absolutely horrific cases of, you know, an infant dying, an elderly person dying, someone who had an Assamese gentleman Muslim who had served the Indian army being arrested for months. So it was just a complete mess up from an execution point of view. The second thing that happened that caused the RSS to give pause was that the RSS's point has been that if you're a Hindu, no matter where you're from, India belongs to you. And if you're a Muslim, even if, you know, you have been here for, you're Indian, obviously, and your family, your ancestors have lived here for whatever thousands of years, you don't belong. So they didn't like the fact that Hindus, whether from West Bengal or from Assam or from Bangladesh, were getting targeted. In Assam also, the tide has kind of shifted against it. People who were pro this initiative, they have kind of gone against it because they don't see themselves divided on the grounds of religion. There, it's an issue of ethnicity. Now, Amit Shah said that he's going to implement this National Register of Citizens nationwide. All right, so that's one. Now, and they've already built a detention camp, which is the size of 7 football fields for supposedly catching these, you know, illegal foreigners who are in India, whether it's people who overstay visas or, you know, that's what they say, or Rohingya entering illegally.
Just 1 minute, Rohit. Okay. So the National Registry of Citizenship, right, is a tool that has been designed to identify people who are in India currently who shouldn't legally be in India.
Correct.
That is, okay, so let's work our way up from that.
So that's it.
Right? Yes. Okay. So then the next question is, in a country as, so it's a very tricky one because, you know, the right-wing narrative on this will be, every country in the world has the right to ensure the people living within its borders have the legitimate right to be within its borders, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you work on the basis of nation states and assume that that is a reality, that is kind of rule 101, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem on this one, from where as you were describing, we see it, is how do you implement this kind of a legislation against a backdrop of a nation that has been so chaotic in its formative stages with the partition,
right?
And also with the recent history of cross-border migration, particularly around the border states. Right?
Absolutely.
So now the question then becomes, is if we are trying to have a pragmatic discussion about this, is how this can't be a kind of a default position to reach down the ground forever and ever, right? You know, that, you know, I have no problems in acknowledging that Indian citizens are the people who have the rights to be in India. I have no problems in understanding that concept. What I'm struggling with is the mechanics of, and I will also not buy the left-wing argument that, you know, let's kick it down the grass because it's not a problem for this, not this 5 years, the next 5 years. That's not a solution.
Right.
So the device that has been picked up, the NRC, the fault is that it is not a fair measure of assessing citizenship.
Right. So you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's not only is it not a fair measure, it's actually an instrument of exclusion. And it will, in and of itself, it is an instrument of exclusion anyway. So I want to say a couple of things. You're absolutely right in talking about the fact that, you know, the question of citizenship and identity is particularly complicated in India because for, you know, recent history, 60, 70 years is actually not a very long time historically. Now, the fact of the matter remains that it's not as if India's had open borders anyways, right? We have fairly strict border controls. I mean, in the sense that, you know, if you're a Pakistani visiting India, you have to report to a police station every week. Just, you know, to let people know about their whereabouts. The bureaucracy in India for any foreigner is insane. If you have to open a bank account or, you know, anything you have to do, have to buy property. We've been a pretty closed society in many ways, even post-91. So it's not the case that, you know, India was this place where the borders were completely porous, you know, hordes have been kind of rushing in. We've already had mechanisms in place. And the fear that, you know, we are going to be overrun with migrants is completely absurd. In fact, even for, you know, someone like Hindus from Pakistan who have sought to move to India because it's been, you know, obviously Hindus, Ahmadis, Shias in some case in Pakistan, and even Bangladesh, which is standing on its high horse now, let's have no illusions that, you know, there is a kind of Islamist hegemonic discourse out there and Hindus are persecuted there. There's no two ways about it. The process for them to even become Indian citizens is very arduous. And I know this in some detail because I'm not an expert in this area, but I had the privilege of reviewing in detail a book by a professor at JNU, Professor Neeraja Gopal. And she has written the authoritative book on Indian citizenship. She's the preeminent scholar of Indian citizenship. And she sort of wrote about these complications. So you didn't need the NRC. Now, we've not even come to the CAA, but one other thing I'll say about the NRC, which is just absurd, Bunty, is that the government is saying that, boss, Aadhaar card, PAN card, voter ID and passport, none of these are going to count as proof of citizenship. Arey, boss, everywhere in the world, your passport is your proof of citizenship. The government is now saying that none of this is going to count as proof of citizenship. You think about the fact that India is a country where there are tens of millions of people who are too poor to have papers, proper papers, right? Papers are a luxury of the rich. Then on top of that, everything, you're saying, arey, ration card nahi chalega, boss. ID card nahi chalega, voter ID. Aadhaar card is not going to work. PAN is not going to work. Arey, even passport is not going to work, right? So then, my point is, pardon my vulgarity, what the F are you supposed to produce, man? Like, do you need a, someone who follows our account, Rajiv Prinja, shout out to him. Rajiv made a point, he said, are you supposed to get an endorsement from like the local Shakha leader, right? So I'm going to make one more point about the CAA and then turn it over to you because I've been going on. The CAA has basically said that there was a Citizenship Act which I believe offered sanctuary to persecuted minorities from neighboring countries or whatever. Now, or, you know, just it laid down some stipulations by which someone who was not born in India could become a citizen, I presume. What the Modi government did with the CAB first, the bill and then the act, is said that if you are Hindu, Sikh, Christian, etc., anything but Muslim from Bangladesh, from Afghanistan, from Pakistan, we will give you citizenship. But if you're a Muslim in these countries, we will not, because Muslims are the majority in these countries and no Muslims are being persecuted. So there's a couple of things here. First, in and of itself, this is discriminatory because you can be, you know, a Muslim who speaks up against the government of Pakistan. You can be a minority like an Ahmadi who are, we know, killed and attacked and they're deemed heretics. You can be Shia in Pakistan or, you know, in Bangladesh. And if you go against the Sunni Islamic hardliners, you can be, you know, you're harassed and you're oppressed. So there's that fact in itself. But the real sort of danger is when you combine the NRC and the CAA, what happens is that, let's say you're an Indian Muslim, and let's just say you're a poor Muslim or even a wealthy Muslim, but you don't have papers, or you don't have your birth, you know, you're 80 years old, you don't have a birth certificate. I mean, who gave out birth certificates 85 years ago, right? Or you misplaced it. There is nothing stopping the government from saying that you're an illegal alien, and under the CAA, you are not allowed to be here, and you have no proof showing that you belong to the national, which allows you to be incorporated in the National Registry of Citizens. Therefore, you can be illegally detained in one of those concentration camps, the size of 7 football fields, indefinitely. So what you have is a recipe for a kind of mass state-sponsored Holocaust or genocide against India's Muslims. And given how this government is going and given what they're doing in UP right now, this is not alarmist. This is a very, very real possibility. Let's never forget that 5 years before Hitler came to power, people thought he was a joke. And nobody thought that any of the things he would do could remotely be possible. So your thoughts on the matter?
Well, I still think there is a comment. You've raised the specter of, you know, the Citizen Amendment Act that has come through. I think there are two things that are. So let's look at it as, you know, I do a lot of service design for my living. So let us look at it from the, as you said, there's a Hindu, there's a Jain and a Muslim in a border country, a state bordering. Basically, you're looking at Jammu, Kashmir, Punjab, Rajasthan in the north, northwest. And in the you're looking at West Bengal, Assam, Meghalaya, and Sikkim in the east of the Bangladesh, because Afghanistan doesn't share a land border with India. So you're a Jain or a Hindu person, and you're a Muslim, right? So for both of you, you have to prove using you have been given a certain set of documents to prove that you're a citizen. I'm confused as to why a passport wouldn't qualify, yeah, or why an Aadhaar card wouldn't qualify. And maybe this, the first thing, if you're trying to be constructive about this, the first thing that needs to happen is proof of citizenship. There should be a menu of 18 to 20 different things which will enable you to prove citizenship. Otherwise, you know, you get lost, right? Now, I don't think we should, in the classic Indian bureaucratic fashion, what smoke and mirrors is happening is they're turning the argument around the detail where the bigger picture is being missed, right? So let's put aside to one side how you prove your citizenship, because that's neither here nor there for the purpose of the argument that I'm making. The moot point is, if as a Hindu or a Jain, you fail to prove your citizenship, and a Muslim, you fail to prove your citizenship, then, as per the CAA, that is level one in the game, right? On level two, the Hindu and the Jain, the Hindu and the Jain are asked to hang around in the country for 6 years before they are granted citizenship, right? And the Muslim person is asked to pack his bags and head off to a neighboring Muslim majority country.
And those neighboring, those countries have said that if you, there are any Muslims, regardless of where they may have come from or not, we are not taking anyone. So that, let's not even come to that right now. But anyway, okay. India is going to try and deal with them. Yeah.
So the orchestration, the challenge in conceiving this program, because what happens in Indian popular discourse is people start jumping up and down about the documentation, because that's our kind of mindset, right?
Uh-huh.
But screw the documentation. That's not the big story. The big story is, from a user case point of view, if two people who are equally disadvantaged start off on a journey trying to prove to the state that they are Indian, one is not only naturally disadvantaged, but one is from the outset kind of disqualified. There is going to be no set of circumstances where a poor Muslim who's unable to prove his citizenship is going to be granted citizenship, right?
Yeah.
That is something that, so when people say that, you know, why is this a risk for the 200 million Muslims in this country, I think the challenge is, what will it take in the India going forward for a Muslim to prove that they belong to this country, right? And I think that's the question that people need to pose to back to the government, that why will that criteria be any different from a person of any other faith?
Well, exactly. Right. Now, the point is that... Sorry, go ahead.
That's one thing. I think the pushback in terms of the articulation of what is, if you... Because sometimes in the noise, you lose track of the sucker punch that has to be landed.
Right.
And to me, the sucker punch that has to be landed is that, okay, you're the people in power, and you've come up with a legislation that needs to make India a more secure place to live in. Agreed. Indian citizens stay in India. Agreed. Right? The disagreement is, are we asking people to prove the citizenship criteria? Is that changing by your faith, right? And if it isn't, you need to prove to the country that it isn't, right? And that is where I think the government is either not having an answer or, you know, the answer is blatant. Because at the moment, the government's position is that we are trying to get a country that is secure, a border that is secure, and people who have come here illegally need to find a way back home, right? Yeah. Now, whether there is, but why is this being done on the basis of religion? Because, you know, there may be Hindu Bangladeshis or Hindu Sri Lankans who need to be, you know, dispatched to their original point of beginning. That was my point.
Well, you're absolutely right. You're making the assumption that this is a fair government. Let's not forget that these are RSS men. First of all, I mean, there are so many historical ironies here. The biggest one, just to digress a bit, is that the RSS did not participate in the Indian freedom struggle. The RSS did not accept the Indian tricolor. The RSS flew black flags on August 15th. And now they're lecturing, you know, people in India on who should be a citizen. If it were up to the RSS, we would all be colonial British subjects still. But the assumption you're making, Bunty, is that this is a government that does believe in the constitutional principle of equality. The overarching ideology, which it's trying to impose and kind of, you know, force onto the constitution, is the idea of Hindutva, which is that India belongs culturally, politically, socially to the Hindus, and that minorities, especially Muslims and Christians, and Muslims in particular, are outsiders, they're aliens, right? So that's basically been the project. And now, this is, you know, that's kind of, there's been a dog whistle against Muslims, a constant dog whistle, since Modi took power. We saw it in the lynchings, we saw it in the humiliation, and this is now taking it to the level of state-sponsored terror, right? As I tweeted a while ago, that the RSS is effectively a para-state, which has taken over every institution. You know, the current army chief was someone who was kicked up the ladder, though there was someone else who had precedence because of his sympathies. The judiciary, you know, you look at the Ayodhya verdict, I mean, it's utterly compromised educational institutions, the media, absolutely disgraceful. India Today journalists, including people like Rajdeep Sardesai, who, you know, one would think stands for like more egalitarian values, equivocating in kind of equating the student protests with the, you know, barbarity of the police and so on. So the thing is, you're absolutely right. But the government is, if the intention is not to answer honestly, if the fundamental intention is not decent, I don't buy for a minute that they're interested in India's security. I do think that Modi, for instance, has compromised India's security with his blathering, his chest beating, what he's done in Kashmir. Assam was relatively stable. Kashmir was relatively stable. Track 2 diplomacy with Pakistan was on track, wasn't perfect. Modi has set fire to all of those just for the purpose of votes. So that's, you know, my response. I mean, I'm completely in agreement with you about the fact that this is, from a logical point of view, this is where the protesters need to kind of target themselves.
Well, yeah, because look, you know, you have to understand this is a democratically elected government, right? Who's kind of bulldozing through a set of proposals, right? With a corrupt, malfunctioning, disjointed opposition.
Yeah.
You cannot burn 15 buses and hope for the best.
Correct.
Right?
I agree. So
the pragmatic response to this, and you are right, there may not be a pragmatic response to this, but, you know, if you have to believe in the functioning of a democratic state,
right.
You have to take it on that basis. That where is the legal challenge? If a bunch of people burn buses and kind of destroy public property, it just feeds into the narrative that, you know, these people, and when I say these people, I mean it as the government intends it, should be shipped off to where they came from, right? And I think it's a very, very dangerous play that has happened.
Yeah.
But I think, as with all things BJP, it sits at that kind of queasy little juxtaposition of, are you really questioning our abilities to make this nation? So if you speak to a person who believes in these bits of legislation, their argument will be, you know, but it's making India safer. In which part of the world will a citizen who's not legally allowed to be there be shipped off? And I think that, you know, if that was what the program was, there wouldn't be a problem. I think the focus is that through a combination of circumstances, combination of history, we are going down a route where people from a particular community are going to be marginalized, picked out, and, you know, victimized, basically. And it's a very sorry state of affairs that it has come to that. And I think what we can do is we start calling out what is happening in this kind of... Because what BJP will do, what the government will do, is they will say that, you know, actually the passport is a valid sign of citizenship. So they will make a minor concession. But that's not what the battleground argument is. The fact that the passport or the Aadhaar becomes a symbol of your citizenship is neither here nor there. Because the wider point is, there's a risk that, you know, 60 million people in the country might be disenfranchised purely based on their faith.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And I think that, you know, we whatever in civil society needs to be done, it has to be done with cognizance because of this kind of patriotic argument. And it's not a patriotic argument. I want to start, that's not my starting point, that, you know, whether in the United Kingdom, whether in the United States, you are only allowed to be in the country legitimately if you have the rights, legal rights to be there. And there is a way in which you prove that. What we are contesting is not the fact that you are a part of India when you have a legal right to be there, but how you legally prove that. That is manifestly seeming to have been being put in place, a system that is gamed and in skewed towards the direction of biasing towards one community. But look, in terms of the opposition to this, is there any... apart from like the occasional brick throwing and, you know, 8 people dead, and I'm not saying that pejoratively, but the fact of the matter remains, in a country of 1.2 billion, right, burning few buses and throwing bricks at cops, is there kind of a, in your view, a coherent thought through?
Yes, absolutely.
Positional narrative which has emerged, which the government is taking,
They are scared. That's why they're backing down. There have been lakhs of people protesting. That it's not being covered in the national media or insufficiently in the international media is not the fault of the protesters. That is what this government will do. UP is under blackout. In UP, it's, you know, very risky to protest. In Delhi, it is riskier to protest as a Muslim in a Muslim majority area than it is to protest an elite institution. Let's be very clear about that. And the things that the police are doing, you know, there are some protocols in how the police have to lathi charge people. You're supposed to swing low so that if you do hit protesters, you hit them below the knee. They're swinging high deliberately to crack heads. So, Bunty, there have been like lakhs of people protesting. And, you know, we had a small protest in San Francisco yesterday outside the Indian consulate, which I went for. You know, there have been protests across the world for whatever it's worth. But in India, there have been massive uprisings, not just in non-BJP ruled states, but in BJP ruled states too. And, you know, that it's, you know, are absolutely disgraceful third-rate journalists like Arnab, Navika, Rahul Shivshankar, Shiv Arur, another low-life scumbag, Rahul Kanwal. They are absolutely clearly acting on orders from the BJP. They're making this out, they're refusing to cover this mass protest. They're refusing, and they're, you know, towing a government line, and they're doing these softball argument sort of interviews with Amit Shah. So, you know, you've had intellectuals like Ram Guha who've spoken up and who've been arrested, Yogendra Yadav. You have, you know, lawyers, students, activists, doctors, not so much, but still people coming together to you know, help those arrested. You have people providing legal services to minors detained. There is a Gandhian who's, I think, in his 80s, and or a lady who's in her 80s. She said that this was a bigger crowd she saw than she saw in the Quit India movement protest that she had been to, right? So it is a mass uprising, and it's still maybe a few percent in the context of India's large population. But, you know, 5-6 million people protesting nationwide is not a small thing. And the BJP is worried enough that it's cracked down everywhere, and Modi's holding some, you know, nonsense Ram Leela rally this in the next few days, where you know, some slum dwellers who have been regularized in terms of their ownership of property will be chanting his praises, obviously stage managed. And Times of India, the Times Group, has once again invoked this mysterious threat of terrorists who may assassinate Modi, which is a card they pull out every time the Modi government is in power. So, sure, you know, it's, and I think that, you know, there are the violence also has largely been fomented by outsiders pretending to be students. They found this out. They blamed some violence on students, and it turned out that the people arrested were all history cheaters. None of them were students. Now, sure, there may have been a couple of incidents, but my understanding is really that the students, the protesters, have been very peaceful. In Bombay, for instance, the police have been exemplary. In UP and other places, they've been brutal. So I think we are seeing a genuine people's protest, and I think and I hope that this fight against a kind of fascist regime continues. So I'll end on that note, and you know, it's a grim time, but I hope that some good comes out of it.
Well, yeah, I think, but where I'd like to leave it is that in any argument, if you take the side that any and everybody who is residing in a country, whether legally or illegally, has the right to be there, that's a lost cause and baits into the right position, the position of people such as those in power. I think every free-thinking and civil-minded person should acknowledge that it is absolutely patriotic and the right thing to do for India to be inhabited by people who have a legal right to be there. The battleground is challenging what constitutes that legality, how you define it, and how you prove it. And if you are unable to prove it or able to prove it, you should, irrespective of your faith, you should have equal chances of success.
Absolutely.
That is what we should do, because you know, because I'm sick of it when people start saying, the moment you start arguing, because that's the Shongjok territory, you know, when you say that, you know, but you know, you're discriminating against one particular faith, people will immediately jump on you, because that's the nature of social media, that's the nature of public discourse in India, that you know, you're unpatriotic. So the opening shot has to be that we acknowledge that India should be for Indians. That's idiot-proof. We get that. The question is, why are people of a particular faith being disadvantaged in proving their Indianness? That is what I'd like to end this.
Absolutely. I think what we've seen is in many ways consistent with that. I think we'll do another episode about the protests themselves. You know, the themes of the protests and some very interesting themes, the way in which the history of anti-colonial resistance has been invoked, the cries of Azadi, Inqilab Zindabad, people singing the anthem. We saw all of this, you know, I saw all of this at the San Francisco consulate protest, Indian consulate protest in San Francisco, and it's, we've seen similar things in India. And I think, you know, a lot of what we've seen is consistent with what you've mentioned. And I think you're spot on, India for Indians, that, you know, we don't want some kind of, right now is not the time for some waffling cosmopolitanism about global citizenship and all of that.
Because, you know, this JNU bazi will not help. You know, all it will do is, if you get too righteous about this, that everybody should get a free pass, is you play into the hands of these thugs.
I agree with you. I was telling my wife yesterday, after I came back from the protest, that I said, you know, like, there were many slogans, and you know, Azadi, like Kanhaiya Kumar, he delivered a rousing speech, Inqilab Zindabad, and saying that every Indian is an Indian, Hindu, Muslim, Sikh, Isai, sab bhai bhai, all of that is wonderful. I said, in the middle one, you know, slogan bound in is racist, sexist, anti-gay, Modi Shah, go away. So I said, "Arey boss, what is anti-gay about the NRC? Like, it's a high law." But it is really not targeting people for being gay. But so, yeah, I think that's, you know, that's a point that sometimes our protesters and our left and JNU crowd needs to keep in mind, that, you know, don't bum every cause in to, you know. So anyway, I'll just end on that note, and we'll pick this up again soon. So take care.
Okay. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Thank you so much for listening to us. Rohit and Bunty would like to sign off. Please stay tuned. Follow us on India Explained on Twitter. Keep listening. Thank you for all your support.